2010. Chatwood captured me because I thought if I lived here, I never would want to move again. Here is the musical crystal ball. Shake it and snow swirls. The place never will change. The sturdy farmhouse, anchored by four chimneys, stands on a gentle rise. Above the front porch, the windows are not symmetrical. I like that. The roof is ugly, and we will replace it with metal. There is a hidden hive, and I put my hand on the kitchen wall and feel the boards hum. The Eno River runs by, and I love the murky, tannic smell of rivers. On the edge of the woods, a fresh stream jets out of the ground, cold and holy, and a tumbled stone foundation remains of the old spring house, where generations kept their food chilled. And so I settled in, convinced that I'd grabbed a star out of the sky. As fires always roar and rain pours, so do farmhouses ramble. The porch running the length of a room converts into a sunroom, a favored spot on winter mornings. A bathroom becomes a closet, and a new bath is added. The lean-to shed converts to a kitchen. The floor plan sprawls like tiles on a Scrabble board. Add, subtract, multiply, divide. The attic becomes a reading room. Another attic makes a good study. The house groans but accommodates. From my upstairs window, I see a brick-walled three-room rose garden, a nymph statue that looks lascivious, and beyond, the pleasing meadow stretching to the river. I took down a view-blocking half-dead tree and planted camellias. This spring, I have a large half-moon cleared for a wildflower garden. Already a plot is turned over and a bench placed for viewing the blooms. Anticipation is half of gardening's pleasures. If an old house is a book to read, and it is, the upstairs study may be my favorite chapter in this house's long history. In the 1920s, the paneled room where I'm writing served as a 15-by-20-foot schoolhouse. An ancient neighbor recalled, "When the Altvaders moved in, 1937, there were still at least a dozen school desks, homemade pine boards with the seat for the next desk attached to the front, and pigeonholes on the desktops for pencils, ink, and erasers. Set in rows, the back desks used chairs along the wall. I'm charmed that a Miss Sally Miller was the teacher. I can see Miss Miller in flower-sprigged navy dress and white collar, a dozen farm children wearing overalls and flower-sack pinafores, their rough shoes and chapped cheeks. The teacher builds a fire and the room overheats, sending out the smell of octagon soap, chalk dust, gum erasers. They pledge allegiance to the droopy flag in the corner. They call out the multiplication table. They learn Wordsworth's poem about daffodils because this house floats on a wave of trumpeting yellow blooms in spring. On a shelf, tin buckets hold their lunches, cold sweet potatoes, biscuits, and syrup. I like to conjure the long-ago children enthralled or trapped here on a late May day close to summer vacation. When I'm stuck on a description, blanking out for a next line, staring out the window, I'm cheered to think this was where they turned the thin pages of the Bible, saw a picture of Washington crossing the Delaware, and read Kipling's The Jungle Book. The first thing to know about living in an old house, the walls are alive. This is not a dream study. I keep my desk instead of a convenient one with drawers because it reminds me of Virginia Woolf's. Sturdy, columnar legs, worn patina of walnut, and a pocked leather top the color of old claret. Floor-to-ceiling bookshelves, others built under the windows, are jammed with my fiction collection, which I've never alphabetized. Poetry and nonfiction are kept downstairs. I can't find what I know I have. Despite four windows, the room is dark, and I hate gloomy rooms. I turn on the ceiling light, the two desk lamps, and the reading light beside a chair. Still not what you'd call bright, but the heart pine walls send out a honeyed glow. On gloomy days, cozy, cozy. A fire feels cheery, especially when my two gentlemen cats choose my chairs for their naps.